you remember what you were talking about?
Before the mic? Yeah. Oh, yeah. What were we talking about? Just the pressure on yourself. I deal better in inspiration rather than in spite, because I think there are people, which is, I think, a fair way to go about it. In comedy, there's a lot of spite. There's a lot of, like, why does this person get to do this and I don't? Mm-hmm. Or I want to be better than this person, so I'm going to work hard and become better than this person at comedy. And I think there are plenty of people that do that, and for them it really works. There's, you know, plenty of people that have become very, very successful through that. And I never really dealt well in that. I don't know. I was never really that kind of competitive. I love the competition. I love the competition between people. But for me, it's always been, I have to be friends with the person that I'm competing with. I love, you know, I love to play, like, board games or video games or you know, I love to play chess. But I can't play chess with somebody that I don't like.
Okay.
You know? And so I, with comedy, is the same way. I'm only competing against people that are my friends, that I really like, and I really want to do better than them, only in terms of, so that we can, like, laugh about it afterwards, and so hopefully I can also inspire them. And there are, which actually comes head to head sometimes, because there are certain people that actually get demotivated when their friends start doing better than them, which I totally understand, that kind of, you know, that kind of anxiety. Like, I totally get if you're, like, starting out with somebody at the same time. Say, you know, I mentioned Albert earlier. We started around, this, like, a similar time. So we've been doing comedy around a similar amount of time. He started a little bit before me, but it's literally a matter of, like, months. So, like, less than a year. So it's not that big of a difference in the grand scheme of things. And there have been times when he has been doing way better than I have, and there's been times when I was doing different things that were, like, that could be considered, like, oh, this is more advanced, quote unquote. And but I never felt like I was demotivated by the fact that he was doing really cool things. I was never like, oh man, like, I never felt like I was losing. I because I don't think that that's how it is. It's not an end game. It's only an end game if you quit, and neither of us has quit. So it's like, so the game doesn't end, you know. And in the grand scheme of things, you know, there might be one night specifically when we're both losers. So that's, God knows there's been plenty of those nights.
And it's the perfect time to give a shout out.
Absolutely.
To Albert and the Beast Comedy Club.
Yeah, I do think I wanted to mention it particularly, and I'm sure that, I mean, we talked about it earlier, and maybe this is this will, you can cut this out later if this doesn't happen, but you said you would have him on your show as well.
I'm
guilting you into it.
You said
yeah.
You signed the paper.
No. It's way better to say it publicly than to sign a paper. Then people will hold you to it way more. Are you kidding? No, but I did want to, and he'll tell you more about this obviously when he is on here. But it's we're recording this at the Beast Comedy Club in Basel, and it is essentially the biggest thing to happen for this Swiss comedy scene in a long time, if not ever, since, like, the first show was organized, in terms of how important it is. And I'm not just saying this for sentimental reasons. There are plenty of those, and I can I can go through both hands in terms of cutting down the fingers of how important it is for sentimental reasons. But also, it has become a legitimate community hub for comedy. People now are waking up to the fact that comedy in Basel is a thing. we recently had an article in the newspaper written about us, which is really cool. We've been featured, you know, in plenty of people's, like, little interviews and stories. And one of the biggest, this is a more recent thing as well, one of the biggest comedy nerd podcasts in the world, one of the, like, fan favorites in the world, actually gave us a little shout out because Albert was a fan of it, and he wrote a little letter to them, and the guy running it actually was kind enough to actually read it and give a little shout out. It's very nice. It's really become a big thing, and 99% of that, in terms of what this club is, can be attributed to Albert. And out of those 99%, a big part of that is a special shout out to his wife Sue as well, because she's a huge supporter of the of Albert's comedy career, which is so funny because I think the other day, I think it was on Albert's birthday, we were she was there obviously, and I was there, and we were having a chat, and I think she said at one point, she was like, "Ah, yeah, I feel bad sometimes, like I don't support your comedy enough," and.
Wow.
Albert was just absolutely flabbergasted by that notion, because I don't think there's any single non-comedian person that supports the Swiss comedy scene more than Sue in Switzerland. Maybe that, I mean, maybe there's one or two, like, also really loving partners, but she's been so supportive throughout
Ben's wife.
She's been so supportive throughout the entire path, and she's a huge part of the beast. And it is his baby, like it is literally his creation, and he is not the owner of it, but he is the creator of it, and that's a very important distinction to him as well. It's a club run by comedians, by very few comedians in terms of how many people are actually, like, the ones running it. But in terms of how many people go up here and perform here, it's not a small number. And it's quite impressive how small the Basel scene is, how many people come to Basel to perform comedy from outside of Basel, from outside of Switzerland. Mm-hmm. We have had some pretty cool legendary comedy people here, between, you know, one of the first ones that we had was actually Adam Bloom, who's becoming really famous. He's written a really, really important comedy book recently, and he's been a comedian for many years, and he's been described as your favorite comedian, basically, for a lot of people. He was here, he's like a legend, and we've had like between, like, I don't know, Tom Hoyton or like Roger Back, Victor Petrashka, and like all kinds of different people that basically are not just from a little city in Switzerland called Basel that are starting out to do comedy and are doing it now. Oh my God, for 5 years? That's a long time. These are people that have been performing for 30 years coming here and being like, this is a good club. And that feels nice when somebody says that about something that you've poured a lot of passion into. It's really, I'm sure Albert will tell you way more about it, but it's a fascinating story, the Basel comedy scene. I always love to reminisce with people about it. It's always good fun. And I imagine it's also fun just as somebody that has seen it, what it was like years ago, and then what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
So quite a shift.
And being part of it a little bit as well.
Yeah. Of course. You're absolutely a part of it. You're a performer. Yeah. And I would say there are people that are non-performers that are just as much a part of it. There are people that are like our friends that have come out to a lot of shows that are just as much a part of it as anybody that's been performing for years here.
Mm. So big shout out. Thank you very much.
For sure.
Everyone.
Come to the Beast if you're ever in Basel. I mean, just the fact that it's such a small city and we're open 4 nights a week is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And I say this as somebody that happens to work for two different comedy clubs in the completely different parts of Switzerland. I also work for Comedy Club 13 in Lausanne, which is also a great place. But it's so weird because people always think like, oh, aren't you like biased? Isn't there like a conflict of interests? between different people and different people that you like associate with, different clubs, quote unquote, mm-hmm. that you perform with. And the Swiss scene is not that big. It's not. If we were so competitive, I don't think we would have lasted.
Oh, yeah.
Especially post COVID. So, yeah.
And it's different still, no? Lausanne then would have different.
Very different.
People.
Very different. It's actually fascinating how different it is, because I mean if we don't want to do a quick shout out as well to some, if you're in Lausanne, come to Comedy Club 13, just the number 13. It's if you Google it, you'll find it. It's also really good. We have really, really good quality shows. We're open also 3 to 4 nights a week. We have French shows, we have English shows, but French speaking, I mean, and English speaking. I realized it was so funny. I recently had a friend of mine named Jerry Staunton, a fantastic comedian, and he's from Ireland. And our English-speaking showcase show is called English Stand-Up, because we need to, specifically specify to people that, like, oh, this is going to be in English. Yeah. And he gave me such a big fuss about it, because he was like, understandably so, but he was like, yeah, people are like messaging me on Instagram saying, what are you, you're doing this English stand-up show? What is this? Because people apparently were messaging him, other Irish people being like, what are you doing? This is ridiculous. I was like, yeah, but, what are we
doing? It's Switzerland.
Exactly. So I have to specify that. But yeah, and that's a very, very lovely club as well, and I really love performing there, and that's also become very much a home turf for me. But it's such a different like vibe, and it's so fascinating how those are two out of the three stationary comedy clubs in Switzerland. There's also another one in Geneva, and it's such a fascinating energy, how different it is between the three places, and it's also quite far away, so it's so there's no conflict.
No.
There's never a good shout out.
So just a couple of questions maybe, more specific to comedy. How is it for you to tell the same joke kind of over and over? You were saying earlier that you really like to tweak it and play with words. So do you feel like when you do this, then it's not the same joke anymore? Or
I have a little cheat code that I kind of... And I don't know if other people figure it out, as if I'm... Sorry, fucking discovering the periodic table of elements or something. No, it's a cheat code because for me, it comes from the theater background.
Yeah.
So obviously when you're on stage in a theater play, you're saying the same line over and over again.
Yeah.
But the trick is to sell it, is to say it for the first time every single day.
Yeah.
And this is different from pretending to say it for the first time, because an audience can always read that.
Mm-hmm.
An audience can always tell. And comedy is the exact same way. It's like a magic trick. You're hearing a story, and you are thinking, wow, this person has never told a story this way before. And it might be... It's a suspension of disbelief, essentially, from the audience. And to really sell that suspension of disbelief, you have to just make it... For me, I have to make it exciting every time I say it for myself. And so for me, it never feels like I'm saying the exact same thing, even if I say it the exact same way, which has been interesting for me... Whenever I have to do like a taping for something, they don't really do TV tapings much anymore, but I recently did like a taping for like a YouTube stand-up show thing. It's cool. Check it out, Red Mic Media. They actually do they do really good work around Europe, and they're really nice. They've been really kind to a lot of different people, and they're really good. Mm. Really good. It's a really fun show because you get to see comedians that you probably wouldn't have seen otherwise. Mm-hmm. So you go into something like that is recording. Mm-hmm. You have to be like really exact and precise. And the first time I did something like that, I was so like stiff, and I was so nervous almost, because I was like, I have to say it in the exact right way, and it worked worse It was worse than me just doing it the way that I would do it in any other scenario. So to try to marry the two, to try to marry the kind of the freshness of it, the fresh feel of it, with the actual rehearsed part, it has been a very interesting to me, a very, very interesting thing for me recently because of the of those kinds of tapings. But otherwise, I just like to kind of get a feel for it in the the moment. I'm much more, like I said, it goes back to me being just, you know, I'm all about performance. So people say that, oh, if you hear the joke twice, you're not going to laugh. I disagree with that. Simply because there's been plenty of videos on Instagram that I will watch that is like a silly video of like a frog jumping and sitting on its hind legs somehow, and that is like kind of silly looking, and it's sitting and it looks like it's looking at you and winks, and I'm like, that's funny, that's hilarious, and that frog, like, and I will watch that video of that little frog winking at me, and I'm like, that's hilarious, and I will watch that a month later and be like, I know it's gonna do it, but I still laugh, you know, like, so people that say like, oh, you hear a joke twice, I'm not gonna laugh again. No, that means it's a bad joke. So for me, it doesn't matter if I say the joke multiple times, even if it's the same way, as long as it still feels fresh, as long as it still feels fun and exciting. So,
and how do you do to rehearse it at home or wherever, in the shower?
I very, like, maybe this is an outdated method, I just literally astral project onto a stage. I just pretend like I'm on stage and put myself in a safe environment, in a position where I have to talk and I have to say it. And it just helps. It just comes out. It sounds like some magic thing. It just comes out. It doesn't mean that it immediately comes out and it's amazing, but something then has to come.
How do you do to remember it?
Then I do usually write it down. I either write it down, or I do like little bullet points in my notebook, or maybe on my laptop. But I also, there's tons of times where I will write a little bullet point of something that I think is amusing, and then I will just go up on stage and I try to say it in a way that is in the format of stand-up. And transposing it from bullet point onto stand-up format for me is always very fun, because you never know. Yeah, exactly. You never know. But also, I found it helps, like, even to, you know, this club right now, right? We're sitting here to just go up onto the stage just before the show starts. Or even, like, you know, whether it's at home, and just hold something in your hand. Have, like, maybe if you have a microphone at home or something, or hold your phone in your hand, or a hairbrush, literally doesn't matter. Something.
I hold a wooden spoon to cook.
Perfect.
You know?
Exactly. And to have it become that microphone, because then the muscle memory still kicks in and it works. And the spoon, in this case, literally becomes the microphone in your head. Your brain literally is tricked. And next time you're on stage, you won't be like, oh, this is not a spoon. You won't think that, because you've already been conditioned to think the spoon is the microphone. It's kind of amazing. And this is like something that I have no basis of knowledge in any kind of neuroscience. And I want to specify that I'm very much not a neuroscientist, but it's just something that I've realized that kind of I've had experience with, that I was like, oh, that's weird. Yeah, that's true. And I kind of realized that, and I was like, okay, maybe there is something to that. Or maybe it's complete gobbledygook. I don't know.
Because I had a friend asking me, how do you rehearse? And I was like, yeah, I just learn it by heart. And he was like, yeah, but how do other people do it? I'll start asking that question.
For sure.
We all do it a little bit differently. Yeah. I need to learn it really by heart. Otherwise, I will add too many. And that's really annoying.
That's totally fair. Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's totally fair. That's I had a problem with that for a long time. I also had a problem with, and I still do in normal conversation, with saying things too many times, too many different ways. Saying the same things, reiterating, which is what I just did
just
now.
To make sure that...
Literally, it's kind of once you realize that, it's like impossible to unsee it.
No, why do you do that?
Because I can't help it. Because that's just the way I talk. Okay. I just love the sound of my own voice. I just love talking. and I had that on stage as well. And I had that as a problem on stage, that I would basically, everything that I would say would take too long. Mm. And I one time at a really fun little gimmicky open mic award show, they gave me a quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes, award for longest setup to mediocre punchline or something like that. It was hilarious. It was great, and it was true. That was exactly what it was like, because I would tell every single story, every single joke for like 2 minutes, and then it would be one punchline. And even if the punchline was really good, it was never worth it. It was never worth the amount of weight. And I had trouble with parasite words as well. The like, the ums. Mm.
Less is more, right?
Less is more, and also just be laconical, you know? That's a good word to learn. Laconical. To say everything very precisely and exactly, I think. That would be really funny if this is where, you know, 15 years later I find out that's not what it means. But yeah, so to be kind of precise, because I think also the audience responds to choice words, and especially if they already feel natural anyways. There are plenty of people that I know that you watch them on stage and they feel so flowery with their language, and they feel so selective and so poetic, and then you might talk to them and off stage and you're like, oh, that's just how this person talks, that's amazing.
I thought you were going to say
I know people like that as well. Yes, absolutely, I know people like that too, and it's always really funny to find that out. But I found the best comedians, or the ones that I've personally responded to most, are usually people that, if they are like that on stage, they are also going to be maybe a smaller version of it offstage, but still a version of it. I've just really enjoyed that always.
Do you have a character you play on stage, or is it you?
I think so. I think every single comedian has one.
Yeah.
Because it's, at the end of the day, it's a performance. Mm. The character can be very similar or close to you, but you're still saying lines and you're still going through an emotion on stage, whatever it is. And so
an emphasized trait, maybe.
Yeah, you have a stage persona, ultimately. And it's better if you have a defined stage persona. For a lot of people, what does it mean to have a defined stage persona? You need to know yourself, right? So that's because their stage persona is an extension of themselves. So a lot of times people are like, how do I get better at comedy? And it's like, how well do you know yourself? And then they're like, I don't know. It's like, well, what do you like? And then they're like, I don't know what I like. I like comedy. It's like, okay, what's something that makes you tick? What's something that makes you excited? And so you start asking all these questions, and you realize, oh, this person doesn't know themselves. Mm-hmm. So how are they going to be able to create something of themselves on stage when they don't even know anything about themselves, where they're trying to overcompensate with this like the extensive kind of persona on stage, where they're like forcing it onto people, and people are like, I don't know who you are. Exactly. The audience will always feel that. The audience will always feel if your persona is not defined, if it's not, you know, if it's not developed, and you might still do well enough, but not consistently. And so it's it always makes a difference. And so you always, that's you know, it's kind of funny actually that I mentioned Adam Bloom earlier, but his book, the book that he wrote recently, was a very, very big chunk of it that talks about this specifically. And so it's very, like, I keep using the word nerdy. I almost want to say advanced, and which is like, by the way, me saying this does not mean that I am, I think of myself as like the most advanced comedian ever. But I think there's also an important asterisk for people that are a little bit earlier on, that there's so much that they don't need to worry about in terms of the persona thing. there's plenty of people that will go into stand-up and mm-hmm. they will start performing and mm-hmm. they'll be like, because I had that. I was like, I just like being on stage and being funny. And then half a decade later, I was like, what is my persona? Mm-hmm. And that's fine. Like, that it can mm-hmm. literally take 5 years mm-hmm. for people to be like, okay, let me actually try to figure this out. So it's totally fine mm-hmm. if you're getting into comedy and you're like, I don't know what my persona is right away. Totally fine. I didn't want to... When I was having that imaginary conversation with somebody about asking them what they like and mm-hmm. just earlier, right? I did not mean somebody that is like just trying stand-up for the first time or the second time or the third time or even, honestly, mm-hmm. the 300th time.
No, but it's a good point because a lot of people don't know
what they
want.
Yeah. It's good to have a kind of a decision of why you're doing this.
Yeah.
And I don't mean a goal, because like I said, I don't have a goal.
Yeah.
But why you're doing it is important. Mm-hmm. Is it like, is it because you just like the hangout
mm-hmm.
scene? Totally fine. There's been plenty of people that have been very good that just like to literally go to the bar, go up on stage, mm-hmm. tell some really funny jokes, and then go to the bar afterwards and have a pint and have a drink, mm-hmm. and that's fair play. Like I love that too. And then there are people that are like, I want to have a Netflix special, right? And that's totally fine. But knowing why you're doing it is very, very important. And I think that's important
for anything.
Pretty early on as well. Like, because I'll stand by that. I'll stand by the fact that if you don't know why you're doing something, I don't think it's worth doing.
I don't think you're gonna do it for a long time.
Yeah, which is also fine. Mm. Which is also fine. I also don't think that everybody should do comedy.
Yeah.
It's so funny because I literally had a texting conversation with a good friend of mine just today about this, because she knows that I do comedy, and she was like, oh, maybe I should be a comedian. Ha ha ha. And I'm like, do you want to be? No. I asked this other question. I was like, well, do you want to be? And she's like, I don't know. And I'm like, that's fine. Do you want to, you know, she's like, what do you think? Should I? And I'm like, look, what I'll say is, you can. And I'll be motivating, and I say, you can do anything, but you don't have to. I think that's such an important thing that people forget about.
I think it's also super important to be aware of what it demands. Like, what it, you know, you said, you were from Milan, and you were traveling by train all over, and you wanted to do this.
Yeah, I think it depends. Like, again, it depends on what you want from it. Because I think I slightly disagree there. Because I think it doesn't really demand anything. That's
if
the thing.
You want, yeah. Okay.
Like I said, there are plenty of people that I have all the respect for in the world that are like, yeah, I like to perform once every couple of months, just go mm-hmm. up and mm-hmm. like. Be funny and enjoy, and they'll be very good at it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, that's great, mm-hmm. awesome. This is just not kind of my thing. I like to do it. You know, I try nowadays I perform 4 to 5 times a week, more or less. You know, it's not my quote unquote schedule in comedy, but if you are somebody that is just very happy with being like, yeah, I just when I have some free time, I go mm-hmm. up and perform, and I enjoy it, mm-hmm. and. There are people that I know that are way better than I ever will be at comedy that will have that kind of schedule. And it's amazing. It's impressive. But that is still the case.
Mm.
And that's fine. Yeah, it's important to know if you want to be doing it. And if you want to be doing it, how do you want to be doing it?
Yeah.
What are you trying to, like... How often do you want to do it?
Yeah.
Like, what are you... Why? What's the reason? And there's nothing wrong... And I mean this with no condescension. There's nothing wrong with quitting. I think like that there's nothing wrong with trying it mm-hmm. and then not continuing. There's nothing wrong with not continuing at any point. If you're 20 years in, if you're 2 days in,
mm-hmm.
you can be like, you know what? I think it's not actually for me. I am so happy that you figured that out, honestly, because I don't think it will ever be a waste of your time.
I don't think I have figured it out yet.
That's fine. Yeah. That's fine. But do you find that you're wasting your time trying it out?
No. I think it's an amazing exercise. Yeah. So I do storytelling now and not stand-up, which put so much less pressure on me. Or I put less pressure on myself because, you know, you don't have to make them laugh every, at another rule.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
And for me, it's just a really good writing exercise with a deadline. And then I go, I come here and I'm like, ha ha ha. And it makes me laugh, you know?
That's perfect. No. That's what I mean. This, by the way, this applies to any kind of performative thing, any kind of creative thing, if you want to go that far. I think it literally, as long as you don't feel like you're wasting your time, you might as well continue. Yeah. That's as long as you have the time and the energy for it, and that's the important thing.
And stand up, and I did it also in 2019 for the first time.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, of course.
And I put so much pressure. Yeah, I had this persona of the Frenchie, and I put so much pressure on myself. You know, from the get go, for nothing, for no reason. You know, and then I saw you guys traveling throughout Switzerland and performing all the time, and I was like, I don't want to do that. I was doing also other things at the same time, like this podcast or yoga still at the time.
Yeah.
And I couldn't see myself just focusing on that. And that's why I didn't. And also, I think I didn't have the tools back then to deal with the emotions coming up when you're on stage and maybe it doesn't work that well, or maybe stress or...
Yeah.
So now once a month storytelling is really good for me.
That's perfect. Yeah. I know I said this to a nebulous person before, but I mean this, like, I'm so happy you figured that out. Because there are plenty of people that never figure out, like, I don't... There'll be people that are doing this for 2 decades and they're like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about this whole comedy thing or this whole performance thing or this whole drawing thing. There are people that are professional artists that are like, I don't know where I'm at, and I'm like, I hope you end up figuring that out, because that's a really difficult position to be in. I really feel for those people, because I think if you're doing something that is creative and you're like not sure why you're doing it, I don't know. I'm usually like, I really just hope you figure that out, because that's it's like meaningless then. That's like, well, there's no reason. Because if you're doing something for no reason, that's a whole other can of worms.
But I think it's amazing that you figured it out already. Also, I want to say
I've been very fortunate. Yeah. I've been very fortunate in that. I had a kind of, in terms of the mental path of it, I got very lucky in terms of not having to wrestle with difficult... I had other difficult emotions throughout it, don't get me wrong, but in terms of the possibility of quitting, easy.
Yeah.
And I also... It was so funny, because actually with my friend Albert, we talked about this the other day. We joked that... Like, I don't really have, you know, aspirations. So I'm not worried about, like, you know, if I don't make it big, if I don't become the biggest comedian in the world. I'm legitimately not really worried about it. And I basically said that.
Yeah.
And Albert just said, oh, I'm so glad you figured that out. I'm so glad that you come to terms with it. And I'm like, yeah. And... almost like an insult, like a friendly insult, but also, you know, it's...
I think it's, like I said before, I think you go without pressure. You do the thing without the pressure, and it's the best.
Yeah, yeah. I'm in a good creative space right now. Mm-hmm. I really feel that way. It's like, and it all adds up, right? Like, I'm in a nice community, which I mentioned earlier. It's a really lovely community of creative people. I'm in two, actually, if you count the theater group, very much also a bunch of creative people, then the comedy community in Basel, both Basel based, but two very creative communities that are pushing me in all kinds of different directions that I am inspired by, be that by other people or by the kind of things that I do, that I get to do, then I'm in a pretty, you know, knock on wood and everything, but I'm in a pretty decent space in my life. Like I'm doing okay for myself. You know, I have a lot of really good friends. I'm in a happy relationship. There's a lot of good things. I feel inspired by people around me. I feel inspired by my friends that are non-comedians or non-theater performers. I feel inspired by my girlfriend, who is a very much a creative person. Quick shout out. She's really cool. Her name's Sarah. She's a tattoo artist and a very, very talented person. And
you can put the link in the show notes.
Sure. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. Her name is La Peste. She's based in Lausanne.
Okay.
If you Google that, you'll find her, I'm sure. She's very talented, and I legitimately feel inspired by her. Somebody that is doing something creative that is so different from what I do. And that is so exciting to me, to be in this stage in my life. So I have, like, again, knock on wood, it feels like I can't really complain about much. Do you know what I mean?
It's amazing.
It's great. Like, as far as, you know, creativity and creative journeys go, I am like, this is like the best time. you have, everybody has their favorite TV show, right? Like, this is whatever is the best season of your favorite TV show. That's what I feel like.
That's amazing.
Just going through my life. Like, this is great. I'm having a great time. And I'm very, very fortunate to say that right now. And I'm excited. I'm legitimately excited about things to come, and I'm not rushing anything at the same time. So it's nice. It's really nice. So
I will call you Guru Ivan.
that's very generous. Guru is, oh god, imagine. That would be the next step, actually. If I did engage in like Buddhism, that would be great.
It would be half meditation circle, half comedy.
Yeah. Do you meditate a lot?
I used to.
You used to?
Not so anymore? Much anymore. I journal rather more.
Was there something that made you move off of the meditation, or was it just kind of organic that it happened?
No, yeah, just organic, and I always explore other tools. I see meditation as a tool, right?
Sure.
To feel better or whatever, to work on yourself. And then now it's more maybe hypnotherapy. Maybe I'll do a little hypnosis, self-hypnosis, and to release a blockage or something. That's also what I offer right now. Hypnotherapy for creatives.
That's interesting. I've never tried that. That would be very interesting. I would love to try that, because that is something I don't meditate at all. I probably should. It probably would really help with some of my, like, we all have our little anxieties and all that. That is a very, like, that's a completely new thing. I would be very curious to try that out. I have my own little releases. It's fine. Yeah, it would be really funny if I just. What, it doesn't even have to be Buddhism, just whatever religion. I think I could really get into a really, really nice cult. And again, another shout out to The Beast
cult,
which is an association in Basel, the Beast
cult.
Comedy Club. It's not a cult, it's an association, it's a Verein, which is very different.
I promise. Sure.
I'm not, for the listener, I'm not doing cross fingers. I'm not crossing my fingers. It's not a cult. I promise.
Just come by.
Just come by. Give us your email address. We do not ask for social security numbers. Why would we? Why would we ask for that? That would be ridiculous if we did.
Just money.
Yeah. What? No. Wait. No. I mean, we do give a very. We do give a signature cocktail, and I'll leave it at that. We give a signature cocktail. Do we know what's in it? Yes. We can tell you what's in it if you ask. We can tell.
Not on here.
No, not on here. No, that would be illegal. It would not be illegal. I'm just making a joke. I have to specify that.
Thank you so much, Ivan.
Thank you so much for having me.
This was really nice. I feel so relaxed.
I'm really glad.
And I have more questions for you than for the live podcast that we're going to do at some point this year.
Yeah, that would be really fun. I would really enjoy that. That's actually, that's another, like, what do you call it? Like next kind of creative project that I would love to be a part of if you'll have me. That sounds really cool. I've never done anything like that, so that'd be very interesting. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, and I look forward to your time.
Yeah, I look very much forward to. Thank you for letting me also give my little shout outs and everything, and I look forward to where you end up taking this as well. So, thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks to all the listeners.
Lovely, thank you guys.
Bye.